This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. 3 years after the violent insurrection at the United States Capitol, more than 1,000 people have been arrested and tried, and hundreds have been convicted of crimes. But the chief instigator of the attempt to overturn the results of the 2020 election, former President Donald Trump, remains free and has now taken to calling the convicted hostages. Trump promises he will free them once he's back in office. The larger question of the health of American democracy also remains tenuous, as pro-Trump lawmakers have attempted to erode voting rights and fuel racism. We turn now to Naveed Shah, veteran of the U.S. Army and Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's also political director of Common Defense, the nation's largest grassroots organization of U.S. military veterans, whose work focuses on progressive issues like voting rights, climate justice, and anti-militarism. Common Defense has also been a leader in the Vets Against Trump movement. Welcome to the program, Naveed.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about the reflections that you might be having on the January 6th attack 3 years later. It still feels like a visceral thing sometimes to think about what happened on that day for you as a veteran, for you as someone who is a progressive. Do you still get the chills when you think about how close we came to losing our grip on the basic thing like respecting an election's results?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And for me, the story really starts before even 3 years ago. It started in January of 2010 when I was deployed to Iraq with the U.S. Army. And during that time, Iraq was holding their first or second ever national elections. For many Iraqis, it was their first time casting a ballot in an election in their lifetime. And I saw on that day how sacred our rights are here that we have in America. And so then to fast forward to January 6th of 2021 and see that play out, that attack on our Capitol, and more importantly, that attack on our democracy, really made me worried for the state of our country and where we were headed.
So do you feel that justice is unfolding, albeit slowly? We do see a Justice Department that has been painstakingly, tracking people down and arresting them and trying them and convicting them. Almost 1,000 people have been convicted, 1,200 have been arrested. Of course, there were many thousands that day, but the government appears to be focusing on those people who were most directly involved in the violence. They still haven't found the person who planted pipe bombs. And just a few days ago, the FBI arrested three fugitives linked to this event that took place 3 years ago. Is justice unrolling fast enough?
Yeah, so justice is unrolling, and we know that it does take time. And I would prefer that they take their time and do it right than to, make hasty arrests and not get the convictions that they need. I think it's more important to get it right. And I think that, yes, it is taking a little bit of time, but we are seeing justice play out. And we are seeing that a lot of these folks are, worried about what they did and rightly facing the consequences. The fact that they arrested these three fugitives, and it took 3 years, but the fact that they finally did arrest them shows that they're still not giving up on the case, and that they're actively looking for anyone and everyone who might have been involved in that insurrection on our Capitol that day.
What do you make of the other attacks on American democracy that have gone on from before January 6th and continued after January 6th in terms of the ability of this country to hold a fair, free, truly democratic election when it comes to presidential races, at least?
You know, that's the thing about January 6th, is that it wasn't just that one day. January 6th, of course, was an inflection point in the fight, but it really began with the big lie when President Trump, or former President Trump, began saying that the election was rigged and stolen before the election even happened, right? And then continued that lie throughout the election period when they were certifying votes, calling for votes to stop being counted. He was actually calling for military ballots to stop being counted, which was, it goes against everything that we believe in. As a military member, I voted by absentee ballot. Why shouldn't my vote count, right? But he continued that lie up through January 6th, and actually that lie has continued with many of his in his own party here in D.C. elected officials as well as candidates throughout the country still continuing to espouse that lie when they know it's been proven in court over and over and over again that the election was free, fair, and certified, and there was no wrongdoing about it. So the January 6th was the inflection point, but the big lie that began before January 6th has continued since January 6th and continues to this day. And we've heard President Trump even now say that he's calling it already calling into question the 2024 election, and supporters of his like Elsie Stefanik who are not refusing to say that they will vote to certify the 2024 election. And that's a real concern that they could do this all over again at the in January of 2025.
I think you bring up a really important point, which is that it's not only Trump. He has an army of enablers in the Republican Party who hold high positions, whether in Congress or in among the ranks of the officials and the aides and the lawyers who he has is surrounded by, some of whom even admit quietly that they know that he's lying about everything, but who have kind of joined in this effort because they believe it could actually win, and it seems as though they are looking for power of some sort. And it seems as though those enablers, who often remain unnamed or are on the sidelines, are equally dangerous. What do you think?
Exactly. I think the enablers are what make the Trump campaign and camp really the most dangerous, is because he cloaks himself in their legitimacy. Anyone can look at Trump and say and know immediately that he's a bombastic, reality TV star. So the things he says and does, sure, could be taken, as entertainment, right? In many ways, he's just being a performer. But when he has lawyers and elected officials, people who should be respected and should hold themselves to a higher standard, espousing his views and his lies, that's what's really dangerous and gets his lies travel further because of that legitimacy that they provide for him.
What could justice for the January 6th insurrection look like? Does it mean not only arresting, trying, and convicting everybody involved, but also ensuring that Trump, because of his role in January 6th, is disqualified from the ballot?
I think I know that that's a decision that some states have already taken a stand on, and that is a decision that needs to be looked at more closely. The 14th Amendment does lay out the criteria for disqualifying somebody from the ballot. However, I'm not sure. I'm not a legal expert about who the arbiter is for that. Maybe it is once he gets convicted of those specific charges. Maybe it is something else that is the mechanism for that. I'll let the legal system decide, but I think for right now, the American people have shown over and over again that President Trump is not a popular president. His policies are not popular. He is a dangerous radical individual who will, be a dangerous and radical president and as he was before. And the second time around, if he gets to be elected again, he will be more dangerous than before because he will not have to run for re-election. He has already done this once. And so all the issues and problems that he had in the first term, he won't have those same issues and problems in the second term. For example, the Muslim ban, which he failed at over and over again, he will find a way to perfect things like that so that he doesn't fail, so that it doesn't, so it goes through, and nobody, the courts, not the legislature, will be able to stop him if he does things like that. And that's what's really dangerous for this country.
He has actually straight up announced that he will be an authoritarian. He said he would just do it on day one of his administration, but just even saying that out loud is terrifying. In a completely separate, well, not that completely separate, but in a slightly separate case, which is around the Georgia election, improper interference, which is, of course, linked to his attempt to overturn the 2020 election, Trump is claiming presidential immunity. And on the day that you and I are speaking, it's being reported, which is Tuesday, it's being reported that his lawyer in that case actually went as far as saying Trump could order the assassination of a rival and still be protected legally because of presidential immunity. It doesn't seem as though, I mean, it's hard to even respond to that, right? Because in a democracy, to claim that a leader has complete immunity from ordering murder basically undermines the very notion of a democracy. It's no longer a democracy for if a leader can get away with anything like that.
No, exactly right. So, one of the hallmarks of democracy is the rule of law, and that nobody is above the law. Not a police officer, not a judge, not the president of the United States. Everyone is held to the same standard, or should be, and we should strive for that. And what President Trump is saying by essentially arguing that he could order the assassination of a rival is that he is above the law, which is, absolutely not the case in this country. For one thing, that we have laws in place where the military cannot be used in the civilian context as a police force or even deployed. Having activated the National Guard for emergencies is not the same thing as ordering that kind of thing to on your political rivals. So his argument doesn't make sense, but it just shows the mentality that, again, not only where President Trump is, but where his allies and supporters are around him. That they're willing to step up in the court into a court of law and say that and say these things on the record shows that what's happening behind the scenes is probably 10 times worse.
I mean, by that logic, President Biden could say the same thing about Trump if Trump's logic was it was in any way sound. It seems as though if American democracy faced with somebody as overtly authoritarian and fascistic as Trump cannot thwart his attempt to gain a second term, then it is a measure, at least to me, of the weakness of American democracy. It should, somebody one thousandth as fascistic as Trump should never make it even to the nomination of a party.
Our democracy is definitely interesting in that it is very open, and we do that for a reason. We don't want to create barriers, right, for the average people. We've had really amazing leaders step into these moments of opportunity, people who come from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life, and that's a beautiful thing. We want more of that. We want our elected representatives to look like the American people, to go to public schools and or even be homeschooled, or folks who have worked in construction jobs, or folks who have worked in academia, everyone from all walks of life to be able to step into these roles. And that's why our democracy is so open, and it's a beautiful thing. At the same token, it is worrisome. And really, the fault of this lies on the Republican Party. They enabled this president to not only step up into this role, but also to take all of the power from the party to essentially cause a chasm within the Republican Party itself, that you are either a MAGA Trump supporter or you're not a Republican to them. Like, that's there used to be a time when we could debate ideas and debate policies, positions with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, of the Republicans and the conservatives. We can no longer do that because they're not debating ideas or policy positions. Now they are, as you said, pushing fascism down, and that seems to be the only path available to them.
What about the attacks on voting rights? Let's talk about that important, critically important aspect, especially as we begin this election year. Boy, it's going to be a long year. And many people have said that one of the strongest defenses that we have against fascism is massive turnout in November of 2024. But if there are states where Trump enablers are using, you know, legally vetted means, legally vetted, quote in quotes, given the makeup of our Supreme Court, legally vetted means to keep people away from the ballot, particularly people of color, people who might be seen as Democratic Party voters. Is that a crucial issue that you feel is important and related to undoing the damage from January 6th?
Yes, absolutely. And having more people come out and vote, we know that that's always a good thing, that we want as many people to go out and exercise their fundamental right to vote as we can. Like I mentioned earlier, when I was deployed to Iraq and during their second ever national elections, on that day, more than 100 Iraqis were killed or wounded. And all they were trying to do was exercise that fundamental right to vote. I don't want to see that happen here. But the fact that they went out and braved those bombs and bullets to exercise that right shows you how sacred it really is, not only here, but around the world. For our democracy to function, we, of course, want to expand access to the ballot and allow everyone to vote. It's really important. And one thing we realized is that about 4.7 million, about 5 million veterans around the country have some sort of service-connected disability. And so they rely on alternative methods to vote, such as early voting, absentee voting, mail-in ballots. And what many of these anti-voting measures, these voter suppression measures did, was make it harder for our veterans who served our country in uniform to cast their ballot. And that's just the wrong answer, right? So if we don't want that to happen to our veterans, we don't want that as veterans to happen to our friends or family members who maybe didn't serve, but they're all still members of our community. They're still, Americans, and they should all be able to vote. So to anyone who is out there who's trying to pass some sort of these voter suppression measures, you need to look at the bigger picture of who this is going to impact, because it's not just going to be the people you think. There's many of us out here that will be impacted, and we should consider that before we take action.
Tell me about Common Defense, Naveed, your organization. I mentioned earlier that it has been a leader in the Vets Against Trump movement, and it's considered one of the largest grassroots organization of military vets in the U.S. Working on these issues. So tell me a little bit about how this organization founded. You're still fairly new.
Yeah, so Common Defense was, met and began formation during the 2016 elections. And the co-founders met at a protest outside of Trump Tower. And once he got elected, they realized that this couldn't just be a flash in the pan. This had to be a sustained movement and organization. And so they formed Common Defense in 2016. And ever since then, we've been at the forefront of these issues, pushing to make sure that our democracy is protected. And the other issues we work on include climate change, and ending the forever war, as we call the wars, where we have troops deployed to 40 countries around the world at any given time. And so Common Defense has grown into this grassroots movement. It's really wonderful. We have members of ours who have been elected to office in different states at the state and local level. And we also, work to help get members of Congress and senators elected as well. And we also have a training program for veterans called the Veterans Organizing Institute, which is a really wonderful program. I went through that program, and many of our leadership team did, which trains veterans on how to go from being what I call an armchair activist to being an advocate in their community. So that's the Veterans Organizing Institute, if folks want to learn more about that.
And give out the website for Common Defense.
Common Defense is commondefense.us, and the Veterans Organizing Institute is veteransorganizinginstitute.org.
And we link to both of those from our website. Naveed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Naveed Shah, veteran of the U.S. Army and Operation Iraqi Freedom and political director of Common Defense, the nation's largest grassroots organization of U.S. military veterans. Their work focuses on progressive issues like voting rights, climate justice, and anti-militarism. And the organization has also been a leader in the Vets Against Trump movement. We've been discussing the third anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.